but also indicating that that is the practice. So just a kind of basic sense of awakening to the way things are. And it seems to me, if I don't awaken to the way things are, without judgment, without analysis, just it's like this, and I come from some preconceived notion of what I'm trying to get or what I shouldn't have, then I don't see how there could be any success, because I haven't really awakened to the way things are. And this is insidious, where I might have some bias about some emotional state like jealousy. I shouldn't be jealous, let's say. And jealousy comes up, and automatically there's a response of trying to get rid of it. And that's from not really awakening to jealousy. On the other hand, I'm not saying that you awaken to jealousy and then dump it on someone, right? Because that's following it. So for me, right understanding, Buddhism really is, well, I think any valid spiritual practice has to begin with right understanding. And right understanding can be formulated as doctrine. So that which has a nature to arise has a nature to cease. That's doctrine. But that doctrine can become insight. You begin to see the changing nature of one's experience. But also right understanding is that this moment is like this. And that understanding is existential rather than analytical or critical or even Buddhist. It's a sensitivity to this moment. It's like this. Now, to do that, you have to be silent. If I make a comment, it's like this. What does it mean it's like this? then the mind doesn't have that kind of silent attention. So when I really know this moment, it's like this, and that to me is right understanding. I understand this moment. Not in an analytical way, but just as an experiential thing. And then it seems for me from that, I can make efforts to sustain that awake mind. I can do all kinds of things. But if I'm coming from a bias that I have to get something or have to get rid of something, then to me that's fundamentally unproductive, won't work. So the basis of this kind of attitude is from the Four Noble Truths, and I suspect most of you have seen that teaching, but that's the, for me, that's the teaching that I've always been encouraged to come from in my right understanding. So the Four Noble Truths, just to remind you again, is that there is suffering, or there is conflict, or there is stress, or there is unease. Many ways we talk about, there's dukkha, we say in the Pali. There is this sense of stress or whatever, and then it has a cause. You know, it's not infinite or absolute. It has a cause, and that cause is attachment to craving. And craving is craving, tanha in the Pali word, is always conjoined with ignorance, not understanding clearly, not knowing the way things are. And the way it's formulated in the teachings is there's a craving to become, bhava tanha, the craving to get rid of, vibhava tanha, and the preoccupation with sense experience, kama tanha, sensuality, and so on. So these three types of craving or wanting conjoined with ignorance are the cause, and they can be let go of. I can let go of that. And so there's an end to suffering, cessation of conflict. And that's possible if I understand craving and the abandonment of craving. And then the path is one, Noble Eightfold Path is one which describes the various elements which are conducive to that both understanding and both that liberation. So if I, let's say jealousy, I don't know what I'm saying, but anyway, let's say there is the uprising of jealousy arises in my mind. Someone, one of the junior monks, comes to me and says he's enlightened. I say, that's not fair. I've been at it 45 years. You don't know anything. Give him a Zen answer or something like that. And I feel, and jealousy arises. If I don't say, well, jealousy feels this way, or I don't even name it jealousy, this is a sense of conflict, feels this way, how can I make right effort around it? How can I understand it? How can I move through it if I haven't really recognized that that's the way it is? If I recognize, oh, this feels this way, then I can do things not based on trying to get rid of it or become something else, but based on right understanding. And right understanding is that that which has a nature to arise has a nature to cease, and it's not personal, that it's a part of flow of consciousness. Ajahn Sumedho has a fabulous book, and I think you could just do the title, Don't Take Your Life Personally. And you don't even need a, you don't even need any writing there. Don't take your life personally. So jealousy, say, if jealousy were to arise, in that kind of far-fetched scenario, and it arose, if I have a sense of presence, jealousy feels this way, then I can see the language of jealousy going to maybe self-hatred. No, that's not necessary. Let go. And that's craving, the craving to get rid of this emotion. So the craving arises, and then the attachment to the craving is through I-thinking, my-thinking. So the mood is triggered by whatever my relationship is to this person and whatever habits my mind has. That's triggered. And I'm not, you know, it's not really not me doing it deliberately, is it? I'm not doing jealousy. Jealousy is just doing what jealousy does. It's natural. It's not fun. So the problem is not so much the jealousy, it's the grasping of the craving around jealousy. So if I'm very worldly, I would tend to then maybe try to undermine the person, maybe write books about how stupid they are. Right? And publish that. But if I'm more in a kind of Buddhist train of thought, I'd be more responsible, then I might feel guilty for feeling jealous. And then I might try to get rid of it. And that would all be in thought. I shouldn't be this way, and he's actually quite a nice monk. No, he's not. And I'd have this inner argument going on, and I'm not really waking up, but jealousy is this way. It feels that way. Now, if I have confidence in that, then through experience, I might say, okay, so what might be the way to sustain awareness of this jealousy but not get caught by it? How can I know jealousy pre-verbally, before I think about it? And this is very difficult to do, to know life before you analyze it and judge it. And that's not absolute, because I'm not saying you dismiss analysis and such like, but to actually, I find, to train the mind to know, oh, jealousy feels this way, and to really know it as a bodily sensation, as an energy form, as a sense of alienation with someone, as a mood in the mind, oh, it's this way. It takes a lot of attention. It's not easy, is it? It's not easy. It's easy to say, but to actually just hold that, allow that to be. So then I might do a practice of metta towards the feeling of jealousy. It feels this way. Or if my mind is proliferating and kind of hating the monk, then I might definitely say, to create other perceptions of the monk, I say, yeah, but may he be free from suffering. But I'd be coming from a place not of craving and desire to become something else, but of actually just cultivating the wholesome, the skillful, around this mood of mind. Huh? So that's why I use language like non-becoming and non-resistance. Then I can see what attitudes are coming up around the natural flow of consciousness. So the Four Noble Truths are to me fundamental in understanding how to make right effort, the very sense of craving. So when I'm in the workshop and I have a unfortunate habit many have of trying to get things finished. And so we have a lunchtime bell at 11:15 and I'm doing something and I'm gluing up and the glue isn't there and I'm trying to get it finished. So then I use that very attitude of becoming, because that's what am I doing? I'm trying to become someone who finishes this piece of work, and this is becoming, it feels this way. And I try to use the craft to calm my mind. So I'm not only trying to make nice bits of furniture or whatever, I'm also always cultivating, doing a craft of the heart. Huh? So that the woodworking becomes a way of looking at the habits of becoming and resistance that exist around that particular formulation of life. And if I keep doing that in all aspects of life, then my heart and mind keep coming to the openness of the way things are and then adapting, doing what I have to do. Hmm? So this way of awakening to the way things are can sound kind of very, very passive, but I would say it's the platform or the the place from which right effort can take place. The kind of the basic insight that one uses, that I use, that you know, that the Buddha recommended, and Ajahn Chah recommended, is the uncertainty and the fluidity and the changingness of all experience. And that is a difficult perception to sustain, because it's not, it doesn't seem to give you much. So like if I feel jealousy and I decide to just receive jealousy as a feeling which is changing, I have to notice the changing nature of the jealousy. It doesn't seem like I'm doing anything about it. And that's the point, that I don't have to fix it, that I don't have to get rid of it, and it's actually not suffering. The suffering is the self-view around it and the attachment to it. But jealousy is actually not suffering. It's unpleasant, right? But, you know, but so is the flu. That's unpleasant. And so is a blister on your hand when you're kayaking or something. That's unpleasant. And same with emotions. There are pleasant and unpleasant emotions. And that's just the way they are. That's just, you know, the emotions are just the way they are. I think Ajahn Amaro was using the emotions are not a person. They come and they go in different ways, and then we create a sense of self around them. So that so if I have some kind of ingrained tendencies in the flow of consciousness that come up a lot, and I can just say, well, it's actually okay, this is all right, it just feels this way. What do I need to do to come to that? I need to sort of open the heart. And so I do welcoming practice to it, and that makes sense. But I'm not doing welcoming in order to get rid of it. I did try that. Oh, come, and drop dead. And that's the insidious nature of craving. You know, you hear the teaching, yeah, I'll use that and I'll get rid of this. And it's very difficult to come to that purity of attention. It feels like this. And then it's the grasping is the problem. It's not the emotion. It's the kind of the preoccupation, the grasping, the complexity that we make around it. And these things, each of us can only learn by ourselves. So in that vein, I would say that for me, one of the most important practices has been this sense of learning how to attend to sense experience with a sense of receptivity and welcoming, and to look at things or to hear things without comment. I find that very, very helpful. If I do that a lot in the neutral aspects of life which is not threatening or difficult, then that habit or that tendency or that skill, I would say, has the kind of energy to come into play when life is more complicated and difficult. That was a difficult line. I'll do that again. In other words, let's say we're kayaking on Desolation Sound, and it is beautiful. And the beauty then, so we're on the water, and I'm looking at the Kermes Islands, and looking at the rocks and the pine trees, reminds me of Georgian Bay and so on. And my mind thinks about Georgian Bay, and I say, yeah, but just receive it. Okay, and then I'm just silent, and I let it come to me. I let the beauty of it come to me, and that takes me to the silence of knowing. Now I'm not there making a comment, I could, but now there's just this, there's just the suchness of the situation, and I allow my mind to hold that, to be like that. So the beauty, because it's not complex or difficult or challenging, it allows me the freedom just to know, oh, it's like this. And that's not a commentary. It's not, I'm no longer saying it's beautiful, it is what it is, but I'm just allowing the vision to come to me. Right? And I do that a lot with neutral things. You know, I'll look at post, right? I can look at the post, and I can say, it looks like an aluminum extrusion, I'd say that's a concrete, right? I can analyze it, it's okay, but then I can just let it come to me. To do that, what I have to do? have to stop making comment and just let it come to me. And then what do I notice? There's space, there's stillness, there's sense perception. And if I do that a lot, on the ordinary, on the simple, or on the beautiful, say, I do that a lot, what happens is then my attitude to life has now been imbued with an attitude which is very, very skillful around something, say, like jealousy. So then jealousy comes up, because I seem to be riffing on jealousy. It could be anything, right? But that comes up. Then because I've done that with the wall, or with the lake, or wherever, I've trained myself to, and maybe I remember that. So maybe what comes up, rather than my self-critical mind, or believing in it, rather than it comes up, oh, what's this like? Let it just come into consciousness. And then there's the stillness of knowing jealousy. And then jealousy is not suffering. It's still unpleasant. But even that is not a problem. It doesn't become problematic. And then what begins to, you begin to notice and you hold the perception of change, that which has a nature to arise, has a nature to cease. And in the cessation of the jealousy, say, in this case, you begin to realize there's a peace of mind which is not dependent on the emotion. That peace of mind was always there. It's not dependent on jealousy or non-jealousy. You say, oh yeah, this arose and ceased. And the more we bring up the anicca-sanya, the perception of change around things, and this kind of receptive quality, I find, we always come back to the stillness of the mind, the stillness of being. And the more we can do it in the neutral, the better we get at do it with the complicated. So take something very, very complicated, like interpersonal reaction that you have, maybe like with your partner or with your parents or whoever, and all the old buttons get pressed and all that. Now imagine if you could be with those buttons and just stay open to it and not react through those buttons. And that's what you're trying to do, aren't you? You're trying to come to the place of no buttons. Nibbana is no buttons. That's not canonical. Commentarial. You see what I mean? As I was saying yesterday, the fear button gets pressed by the situation that I'm in, you know, and it's not my fault. It's neither right nor wrong. It is what it is. And then what's the problem? Is it the fear, or is it the desire not to have the fear? And once I suss that out, then the button gets pressed, but the fuel for future buttoning begins to run out. The word for attachment in Nepali is upadana, and upadana is an interesting word because it means both attachment, right, and fuel. And you can see that my reactivity to the buttons fuels more buttons, right? And you can see how when the button gets pressed and I don't fuel it with self-view and I just know it, then the fuel for future aggravations of that sort dies out. And so one of the images we have of the deathless or Nibbana is the cooling of the mind, where the mind is no longer heated by these different aggravations. Huh? And these are very personal things. You know, each of us have to understand how to do this ourselves. But so I just try to recommend this kind of simple awakening, and then offering a few, you know, things to open the heart, and then I kind of think that everyone has the intelligence to just get on with it and sort out their own buttons. So like if you're a person that doesn't have any fear, good on you. I'm happy for you. But you probably have some buttons. You probably, you know, something happens. And when the button gets pressed, then that's the best time for practice, isn't it? Because oftentimes the things you face in life are not the things you face in the Zafu. But then the things you face in the Zafu are not the things you face in life. So to try to make this 24/7, to always awaken to the way things are, and then constantly learn in that way. That makes sense? Yeah? All right. So let's stretch your legs a wee bit if you want. Don't disappear on me. And we'll do some sitting practice.